The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. This is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the June Blind Post, an update on seeing AI, from the NPR.org, DOJ fails to report on making federal websites accessible. From Body.Bulletin, a new clue to long COVID. From Bleeping Computer, I will be reading headlines and going into articles on Raccoon Stealer, YT Stealer, that's YouTube, Astra Locker Ransomware. And let's get started. Food Lady Lori Motis wants to remind us that there will be no issue of the Blind Post News in July. The next issue will be come out in August. I'm speaking of the Seeing AI app. Since they updated it, I can now read the product barcodes on all my grocery and personal products. The trick, of course, is locating the barcode. On most canned items, it is close to the seam of the label. I have found it on my shampoo and conditioner and other items by slowly turning the product, and when the app sees the barcode, it starts making a beeping sound and then a little tune and reads the name. You can get more info and get the ingredients and sometimes even the directions. You then must back out of this to get back to where you can read another product. It makes sorting through my groceries much faster than using the short text option. From NPR.org, posted June 30th, the Department of Justice fails to report on making federal websites accessible to disabled people. Article by Shruti Rajkumar, that's Shruti Rajkumar. About a quarter of Americans live with a disability, but nearly a third of the most popular federal websites are difficult for disabled people to access. It has been 10 years since the Department of Justice filed a biennial report on the federal government's compliance with accessibility standards for information technology. A bipartisan group of concerned senators say the reports are required by Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act. On Thursday, a group of seven senators sent a letter to the department asking for the DOJ to once again issue these reports, and the lawmakers want to know why the agency hasn't filed them. The letter not only has bipartisan support, but also the support of chairs and ranking members of three Senate committees. To have no reporting in a decade is just unacceptable, said one of the senators, Bob Casey, Democrat, Pennsylvania, told NPR. It's critical because of the barriers that people with disabilities face all the time when it comes to the full access that they should have to the resources of the federal government and the resources especially that are provided online, he said. Under Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, the federal government is required to make all of its websites accessible to disabled people and to publicly report on its compliance with accessibility standards every 2 years. The Justice Department did not immediately respond to NPR's request for comment about the senator's letter. Website accessibility means that a website has been designed with the needs of people with disabilities in mind so that anyone can navigate that website, says Ashley Johnson, who is the senior policy analyst at the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. This can include making sure the websites can work well with assistive technology devices such as screen readers that read aloud content and screen magnifiers that enlarge content. Without regular reports, Congress, taxpayers, and agencies themselves lack a crucial source of feedback for identifying and resolving long-standing accessibility issues, the senators wrote. Casey told NPR that reporting is critical, not just for the executive branch and the legislative branch to have this information, but to get the information out publicly so that not only people with disabilities, but all Americans know what is happening in these agencies as it relates to accessibility. DOJ previously reported mixed success in federal website accessibility. The latest DOJ report from 2012 had identified substantial gaps in Section 508 compliance across the federal government and included recommendations for agencies to meet their accessibility requirement, the senators wrote. For example, the DOJ reported a mixed levels of success in implementing Section 508 and recommended that agencies increase training, appoint 508 508 coordinators and establish 508 offices or programs. It is unclear why the DOJ stopped issuing these biennial reports, as well as whether it collected Section 508 compliance data or issued recommendations more recently than 2012. Questions remain on whether the DOJ has the resources and personnel necessary to comply with the law and issue these reports, and what its plans are to begin meeting the reporting requirement. The senators said they want answers regarding the situation by July 29th. Why is accessibility important? Within the U.S., 26% of Americans live with a disability. Yet a 2021 report by the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation found that 30% of the most popular federal websites did not pass an automated accessibility test for their homepage, and 48% of those sites failed the test on at least one of their three most popular pages. Without accessible websites and other information technology, people with disabilities aren't treated equally under the law, Casey said. Johnson of the foundation said that the fact that the DOJ hasn't reported on the federal government's compliance over the last decade speaks to a larger issue of disabled people not being prioritized by society at large. We're all so used to having information at our fingertips, literally on our phones. But if you have a disability and you can't get that information from the agencies, it just flies in the face of not just transparency, but what our society has come to expect in the terms of the ability for people to access information, he added. So we look forward to the DOJ's answers, and those answers will help us get a better sense of what's happening and what next steps have to be taken. From body.bulletin.com, a new clue to long COVID. The transfer of air from lungs to blood may be the basis of many symptoms. Article by James Hamblin, posted June 30th. Long COVID, or post-COVID syndrome, can cause such a wide array of symptoms that it's been a challenge to identify unifying threads behind them. Many standard blood and imaging tests have failed to capture the problem or explain a cause. What's happening that leaves people to have such different experiences? As the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention describes the vastness of the condition, people who experience post-COVID conditions most commonly report tiredness or fatigue that interferes with daily life, symptoms that get worse after physical or mental effort, also known as post-exertional malaise, fever, difficulty breathing or shortness of breath, cough, chest pain, fast beating or pounding heart, also known as heart palpitations, difficulty thinking or concentrating, sometimes referred to as brain fog, headache, sleep problems, dizziness when you stand up, lightheadedness, pins and needles feelings, change in smell or taste, depression or anxiety, diarrhea, stomach pain, joint or muscle pain, rash, changes in menstrual cycles. So it's a list that includes almost everything, and that's just the most commonly experienced symptoms, not to mention the variations in severity and duration. You might have many, or one, or even none of the above for an indefinite amount of time. Few other disease processes involve such a variety of experiences. When they do, they're typically divided into different diseases. It's entirely possible, even likely, that the broad umbrella of long COVID is actually grouping together not just many different symptoms, but different underlying reactions at a cellular level, triggered by different elements of COVID-19. These are the pathways we are only beginning to understand. But this week, a group of Canadian scientists appear to have found one microscopic issue that could explain many of the above symptoms, from fatigue to shortness of breath to insomnia to dizziness. It could also explain why many of the standard blood tests, x-rays, CT scans, etc., appear to be normal despite the very real symptoms. Published in the journal Radiology this week, the new study followed patients who had symptoms of long COVID 9 months after the initial illness. Using a specialized MRI, researchers asked the patients to inhale xenon gas during the scan. This allows radiologists to see just how well gases are traveling across the membranes in the lungs and on to the red blood cells in the adjacent capillaries. Compared to peers, the people with symptoms of long COVID had impairments in this process. There was nothing showing up in their lungs, as with pneumonia or during acute COVID, nor was there a problem with pulmonary function tests, like there might be in asthma or COPD, where air is not getting in and out correctly. These tests were, quote, normal, but they didn't tell the whole story. There was nonetheless something apparently preventing the usual transfer of oxygen in the alveoli, which is exactly the sort of finding that, although it might not make you feel severely ill in the way of COVID-19 itself, over time the process could plausibly lead to fatigue, exhaustion, headaches, changes in sensation, difficulty concentrating or sleeping, and much of what's on the list above, especially if you consider how these symptoms can layer on top of one another, in turn worsening the others or even causing new issues as they persist. This struck me as a plausible mechanism that's worth taking seriously in future research. The lead researcher, Grace Parraga, P-A-R-R-A-G-A, told CBC, "Now that we have what's happening, where it's happening, and when it's happening, we can figure out the why and the who. There may still be other processes at play, and clearly questions remain about what's to be done to actually help people experiencing these symptoms. It isn't clear from this study just what's happening to impair the gas transfer along those delicate membranes either. But for the many, many people who've suffered with very little data to explain what's going on, this seems a significant step toward a concrete picture that in itself matters." BleepingComputer.com headlines listed in reverse date order from latest to earlier. In the Departments of Security and Microsoft, CISA orders agencies to patch Windows LSA bug exploited in the wild. CISA has re-added a security bug affecting Windows devices to its list of bugs exploited in the wild after removing it in May due to Active Directory, AD, certificate authentication issues caused by Microsoft's May 2022 updates. Article by Sergio Gatlan, G-A-T-L-A-N. Microsoft Security. Microsoft updates Azure AD with support for temporary passcodes. Azure Active Directory, Azure AD, now allows admins to issue time-limited passcodes that can be used to register new passwordless authentication methods during Windows onboarding or to recover accounts easier when losing credentials or FIDO2 keys, also by Sergio Gatlan. In the Department of Microsoft, Windows Server 2012 reaches end of support in October 2023. Microsoft has reminded customers that Windows Server 2012/2012R2 will reach its extended end of support EOS date next year on October 10, 2023. In the Department of Security, Jenkins discloses dozens of zero-day bugs in multiple plugins. On Thursday, the Jenkins security team announced 34 security vulnerabilities affecting 29 plugins for the Jenkins open source automation server, 29 of the bugs being 0 days, still waiting to be patched. Toll fraud malware disables your Wi-Fi to force premium subscriptions. Microsoft is warning that toll fraud malware is one of the most prevalent threats on Android, and that it is evolving with features that allow automatic subscription to premium services. Article by Yonat Ilascu, I-L-A-S-C-U, posted June 30th. Macmillan shuts down systems after likely ransomware attack. Publishing giant Macmillan was forced to shut down their network and offices while recovering from a security incident that appears to be a ransomware attack. Article by Lawrence Abrams, posted June 30th. Microsoft Exchange servers worldwide backdoored with new malware. A newly discovered lightweight and persistent malware was used by attackers to backdoor Microsoft Exchange servers belonging to government and military organizations from Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. Article by Sergio Gatlan. Ukraine targeted by almost 800 cyber attacks since the war started. Ukrainian government and private sector organizations have been the target of 796 cyber attacks since the start of the war on February 24, 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine. Article by Gatlan. Russian hacktivists take down Norway government sites in DDoS attacks. Norway's National Security Authority, NSM, published a statement warning that some of the country's most important websites and online services are being rendered inaccessible due to distributed denial of service, DDoS, attacks. Article by Bill Toulas, T-O-U-L-A-S, posted June 30th. X-Files info-stealing malware adds support for Falina delivery. The X-Files info-stealer malware has added a delivery module that exploits CVE-2022-30190, aka Falina, F-O-L-L-I-N-A, for dropping the payload on target computers. Article by Bill Toulas. Google blocked dozens of domains used by hack-for-hire groups. Google's threat analysis group, TAG, has blocked dozens of malicious domains and websites used by hack-for-hire groups in attacks targeting high-risk targets worldwide. Article by Sergio Gatlan, posted June 30. AstroLocker 2.0 infects users directly from Word attachments. A lesser-known ransomware strain called AstroLocker has recently released its second major version, and according to threat analysts, its operators engage in rapid attacks that drop its payload directly from email attachments. Article by Bill Toulas, posted June 30. OpenSea discloses data breach, warns users of phishing attacks. OpenSea, the largest non-fungible token NFT marketplace, disclosed a data breach on Wednesday and warned users of phishing attacks that could target them in the coming days, posted June 30. Walmart denies being hit by Yanluo Wang ransomware, that's Yanluowang. American retailer Walmart has denied being hit with a ransomware attack by the Yanluowang gang after the hackers claimed to encrypt thousands of computers. Article by Lawrence Abrams, ABRAMS, posted June 29th. Avaya sysadmin indicted for illegally generating and selling VoIP licenses. Three defendants who allegedly sold over $88 million worth of software licenses belonging to Avaya Holdings Corporation have been charged in Oklahoma, the United States, facing 14 counts of wire fraud and money laundering. Article by Bill Toulas, posted June 29th. New YT stealer malware steals accounts from YouTube creators. A new information stealing malware named YT Stealer is targeting YouTube content creators and attempting to steal their authentication tokens and hijack their channels. By Bill Toulas, posted June 29th. Posted earlier in June by Bill Toulas, Raccoon Stealer is back with a new version to steal your passwords. The Raccoon Stealer malware is back with a second major version circulating on cybercrime forums, offering hackers elevated password stealing functionality and upgraded operational capacity. The Raccoon Stealer operation shut down in March 2022 when its operators announced that one of the lead developers was killed during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The remaining team promised to return with a second version, relaunching the MAAS malware as a service project on upgraded infrastructure and with more capabilities. According to the security analysts at Sequoia, S-E-K-O-I-A, Raccoon Stealer 2.0 is now promoted on hacking forums, with the first samples captured by malware analysts earlier this month. Raccoon's silent reemergence. The admin of the project posted a teaser on June 2, 2022, informing the community that the testing of the Raccoon Stealer 2.0 has been underway for 2 weeks, and clients, quote, have been happy with the beta. Quoting the screenshot, "Yes, my dear friend, this is not a rumors. After our teammate loss, we made a decision that we cannot leave our project, and we will continue our work in his honor. Also, we build big community who support us during our lifetime because they don't see any alternative to work with. This month, we worked on Raccoon Stealer 2.0. Project was totally coded from the very beginning. New backend, new frontend, absolutely new Stealer soft. I will provide all details after beta test ends. Believe me, there are many interesting things to present. Beta test in process, about 12 days, and clients mostly happy about it. Some minor issues are left to fix. I think we are moving to release date in the next 2 weeks. We are miss our clients and want to go back to full working volumes. See you soon." Raccoon's representative announced the success of the beta. According to the malware authors, the new Raccoon version was built from scratch using C++, featuring a new backend, frontend, and code to steal credentials and other data. A new malware family detection was discussed among analysts on Twitter on June 8, 2022, who assigned the name Record Breaker, not realizing this is the next major version of Raccoon Stealer. Sequoia's technical analysis now confirms that this 56 kilobyte sample is the new Raccoon, able to work on 32 and 64-bit systems without any dependencies, only fetching 8 legitimate DLLs from its C2 servers. The C2 also provides the malware with its configuration, apps to target, URL hosting the DLLs, token for data exfiltration, receives machine fingerprint data, and then waits for individual post requests that contain stolen information. The data stolen by Raccoon Stealer 2.0 includes the following: basic system fingerprinting info, browser passwords, cookies, autofill data, and saved credit cards, cryptocurrency wallets, and web browser extensions including MetaMask, TronLink, Binance Chain, Ronin, Exodus, Atomic, Jax Liberty, Binance, Coinomi, Electrum, Electrum LTC, and Electron Cash. Individual files located on all disks. Screenshot capturing. Installed applications list. While the malware authors claim the exfiltrated data is being encrypted, Sequoia didn't observe any functions of this type in the analyzed sample. What stands out is that the new Raccoon sends data each time it collects a new item, which increases the risk of detection but ensures maximum effectiveness until the malware is discovered and uprooted from the host. Likely to see increased usage. Raccoon Stealer's exit from the market was so short that one would call it more of a temporary hiatus, so neither its reputation nor cybercriminal interest in it has faded. While other information stealers appeared during Raccoon Stealer's hiatus, such as Mars Stealer and Jester Stealer, none of them had the chance to reach Raccoon's notoriety and reputation. We expect a resurgence of Raccoon Stealer V2 as developers implemented a version tailored to the needs of cybercriminals, efficiency, performance, stealing capabilities, etc., and scaled their backbone servers to handle large loads, comments Sequoia in the report. Finally, it is essential to note that Raccoon Stealer's second major version is currently only available to a limited number of hackers, most likely previous customers. The cost is set to $275 a month or $125 a week. Its operators have chosen not to announce Raccoon's wide availability yet, possibly because they're still working on some aspects of the malware. Sequoia highlights the absence of modern anti-analysis and detection avoidance mechanisms in the examined sample, so these could be implemented next. Update June 28th, we updated the post to add screenshots of Raccoon Stealer 2.0 panel provided by 3XP0RT. Also, we removed mentions of Raccoon Telegram, as well as a screenshot showing a message on the platform after the researcher confirmed to us that it's fake and not related to the malware project. From the June-July issue of AARP the magazine, how we're fighting for you. AARP takes on prescription prices. We have been listening to you about the costs of your prescription drugs, and we're as mad as you are. Thousands of older Americans have shared with us how paying for their medications has become a burden, in some cases making them choose between their drugs and rent or groceries. In 2019, AARP launched a multi-year campaign to lower drug prices, and despite fierce opposition from powerful pharmaceutical company lobbyists, we are winning this fight. AARP has already worked to help pass dozens of bills at the state level, but more needs to be done. Take retired police officer Larry Zarezeki, Zarezeki, who told AARP he had to sell his home to afford medication to treat his Parkinson's disease. Inspired by people like him, AARP is ramping up the pressure on Congress to pass national prescription drug reform. As part of our Fair Drug Prices Now campaign, AARP members and activists have delivered more than 4 million petitions, sent 1.2 million emails, and made more than 100,000 calls to Congress, We launched a national advertising campaign to keep up the pressure, and it's working. Last November, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to allow Medicare to negotiate some drug prices, potentially saving hundreds of billions of dollars over a decade. Now the legislation is in the Senate, where hearings have been held. A vote on the package could happen this summer. If it passes, it will then go to President Joe Biden, who has publicly endorsed the bill, to be signed into law. Letting Medicare negotiate lower drug prices has broad support with voters from all parties and saves money for seniors and taxpayers, says my colleague Nancy LeMond, LeMond, AARP Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. There is no reason Congress can't get this done. The fight goes on. Americans are tired of paying nearly three times what people in other countries pay for drugs. AARP won't stop until every American has access to affordable prescription drugs. Article by Bill Sweeney, Senior Vice President for Government Affairs, leads AARP's advocacy efforts. Join AARP's efforts. Help AARP work to lower prescription drug prices at aarp.org/get involved. Learn more about AARP's Fair Drug Prices Now campaign at aarp.org/rx. From the June AARP Bulletin, Fraud Watch, page 34. Hear these words, hang up. Here are seven actual scam phone pitches we've logged recently at the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline, with names and details changed to protect privacy. Can you detect the signs that they are fraudulent? Remember, imposter fraud, in which criminals pretend to be law enforcement, government officials, or other authorities, is now the number one type of consumer scam in America. The better you are at detecting it, the safer you become. Scenario 1. Hello, this is Mrs. Pearl. This is Bill from Genetic Testing Services. Your doctor reached out to us because he's concerned with the cancer that runs in your family and would like you to take a DNA swab test. This test is covered by Medicare, and we just need your Medicare number to process and ship out the order. Hang up when you hear any request for your Medicare number. This is a scam aimed at billing Medicare for unnecessary tests, many of which it does not cover. Scenario 2. Good morning, this is Apple Inc. We are calling to tell you there is a problem with your phone and someone has placed malware on it. We will need you to download AnyDesk onto your phone so we can help you. Hang up when anyone you do not know asks for remote access to your phone. Scammers are looking to steal personal information for identity theft or fraud. Scenario 3. This is Agent McMurphy from the IRS, and I am calling to inform you that you have a federal arrest warrant for not paying your taxes. Please press 1 on your keypad to be connected to my desk so we can clear up this matter. Hang up on any call you believe is coming in as a computerized robocall. IRS employees never demand money or threaten you over the phone. They may call to set up appointments or discuss audits, but only after trying to notify you by mail. Scenario 4 describes an imposter begging for bail money. Scenario 5. Hello, sir. This is Amazon Security calling to inform you that there's been an attempt to order items on your account. But don't worry. We can help with the refund. I just need a few pieces of information from you to get this started. Hang up when asked for info to access your bank or other private accounts remotely. If you think there could be a problem, go directly to your Amazon account and contact the company directly through its website. Scenario 6. This is Denver Energy Company, and we are notifying you that you have missed your last two payments, and unfortunately your electricity will be shut off by the end of today unless you can pay immediately over the phone. Hang up when threatened over the phone, especially by a robocall. Utility shutoffs are not handled that way. You get notification in the mail. Scenario 7. This is the Social Security Administration, and your Social Security check has been frozen due to fraudulent activity. Press 1 to take care of this matter. Hang up when any government official says you need to pay money over the phone or ask for personal information. That doesn't happen. I've run out of time for this week's episode of Vision News. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next week. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.